You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Hey, real estate fan, and welcome once again to another episode of the Real Escape Investing Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
This week, we have kind of an unusual topic to take apart. If you own enough rental units in Quebec, mental health will 100% come knocking. In this episode, I share my first experience with psychosis in student housing and how 20 years later, schizophrenia, hoarding, drug-induced psychosis, and untreated mental illness are regular challenges in my buildings. If you see investing in real estate as part of your future, it's a matter of time before hoarding, dementia, sanitary issues, and noise complaints find you. Landlords today are managing what the public health system won't. And this episode is going to give you some tips and context to help prepare you. And I want to just remind you that, you know, part of the reason why I do these episodes and why this show is so important to me is that my goal is not necessarily to take a political position or to, you know, have a grandstand from which to expose my opinions, but it's really to help you as an investor understand what you're getting yourself into and also perhaps to gain a little bit of insight into some of the things that some of the issues that are facing us. And I think that in real estate investing and also in everything that surrounds housing, we're not giving enough airtime to this issue of mental health. And so, you know, before looking at this with the lens of political critique or, you know, something that is making comments about what our system is doing wrong, this goal of this information is really to help you understand the bigger picture of what's happening and then how to take concrete action when some of these issues come knocking at your door, which statistically, if you own enough units and you own enough property, you will end up facing, some of the issues that I'm going to outline in this episode. And while we're on the topic of taking action, I would love to meet you in person. There are tickets left for our next Equity Builders Club networking event on September 16th. We're back again at the University Club after having taken the summer off. And if you want to grab a ticket for that event, you can head over to equitybuildersclub.com/events. And if for some reason you can't make that event, just go ahead and register and you will get updated on all of the following networking events that we have for the rest of the year. And, you know, that's a really great place to get out of your shell, to meet some other investors, be surrounded by like-minded people, and begin to build some of those real estate networks that are going to help you have a peer group, help you have professionals around you that are going to help you grow your portfolio and make sound decisions as you progress as a real estate investor. So that's, you know, my little segue into some of the action taking that you can do and also some framing for the show that if you hear some statistics, some opinions, some things that surprise you, really bear in mind that what I'm trying to do is, you know, not have a sociology paper here, but to help you as an investor make sound decisions and project how you're going to hedge some of your bets and how you're going to prepare yourself for the day that you confront some of these mental health issues in your own properties. So the place that I want to start this is that, fortuitously, my first day as a property manager, I started my journey in real estate in student housing when I moved into a co-op house at the University of Toronto. And I often tell the story of how I, within 24 hours of moving in, discovered that the communal dumpster was so full of creepy crawlies that I then ended up cleaning it out. And for that one action, I was voted house manager of that crazy Victorian mansion full of 15 disorganized students. And that really set me on the path to make property management really like my main gig when I got older. But the story that I tell less often is about the fact that we had a schizophrenic housemate who was living in that house. And so I was 19 years old. I moved out of my parents' house into this crazy big house. And then You know, after I did my first shopping, we had these like six communal fridges in the kitchen. And, you know, I went and did a shop like you do when you move in somewhere, or bought some bread, bought some vegetables, put them in the fridge. And then the first morning when I came down to eat breakfast, boom, no bread. And so I was like, okay, well, there's a lot of people who moved in. So like maybe somebody, you know, made a mistake and took my loaf of bread and started eating that instead. But then it turns out that all my housemates, their bread disappeared too. No loaf of bread in the entire house, six fridges, 15 people, no bread to be seen. So that's weird. And then the next morning, same thing, except we came down and all of a sudden, all of the long vegetables had disappeared. The carrots, the zucchinis, the eggplant, any vegetable that had that kind of long shape had disappeared from the fridges. And then one of the housemates who'd been living there for a while alerted us to the fact that we had a schizophrenic living in the house and that she seemed to be having some sort of a crisis. And then over the next few days, this proceeded to escalate into her deciding that one of our housemates was Satan. And so every time he would walk into the room, she would point at him and scream, "Satan, Satan." And then finally she ended up throwing a plate at him. The, you know, people who were the overseers of that co-op situation came to evict her. And so then I ended up, you know, sleeping one night where she was outside of the house. She'd been evicted and couldn't come back in and was, you know, screaming to try to get back in, which then ended up keeping us awake all night. And so like, if you could imagine that you're like a 19-year-old kid who just moved away from home and you're like having your first experience away at university, like this is a kind of an interesting way to begin your journey as a student, but also on the property management highway. And so, you know, I give this as a preamble. That story is like more than 25 years old at this point, but it's kind of an interesting introduction into the world of property management, which, as you will see by some of the statistics I'm about to share, our society doesn't have a whole lot of solutions to mental health problems. And if we look at the way in which some of these social networks that we had, some of the family structures, some of those things where, you know, people who had mental challenges were either looked after by their families or in the community, and that they had this kind of safety net around them. That's really not the way that things are functioning today. And so there's a bunch of reasons coming together that mean that if you are a professional landlord or if you plan to invest, the chances that you're going to have to end up dealing with tenants who have, you know, mental issues from the mild to the severe is actually fairly high. And, you know, I can also share anecdotally that in my career as a property manager, like I have dealt with all sorts of different issues, you know, since that first day when I moved into the co-op house. But the whole purpose is to give you a sense for the kind of thing that might come up for you on your road as a real estate investor. So before, you know, I tell you a couple of those stories and give you some tips on what you can do, I just want to give you some statistics that are going to help you understand the magnitude of this problem. So here are some key mental health stats. So mental health trends in Canada from 2012 to 2022 definitely show that all sorts of mental health issues are on the rise. So, you know, the kind of more garden variety, so anxiety and depression, have seen a severe uptick. You know, they've more than doubled in a decade. So generalized anxiety went from 2.6% to 5.2%. And major depressive episodes have gone from 4.7 in 2012 to 7.6 in 2022. Now, these statistics are especially alarming when you look at, you know, certain population groups. And we're going to see that not everyone suffers in the same way from these, you know, mental health issues. And so young women, 15 to 24, social phobia has gone from 6.1% in 2012 to 24.7% in 2022. So there was the COVID event in there, which, you know, really did not do wonders for people's mental health. But to say that one in four young women is suffering from social phobia is like really a very crazy thing. For schizophrenia, interestingly enough, and I was actually surprised by this, there's a rate of, you know, one in 150 to 300 people who typically suffer from schizophrenia. It's a mental issue that typically affects men more than women, but that has actually not risen in the past time period. So that's kind of interesting. We then have the fact that, you know, aging populations have an effect on mental health. And this is actually something that I wasn't aware of when I started researching these statistics. And so although hoarding affects 2-4% of the general population, it affects 6% of people who are older than 55 years old. And what you will realize is that as we have more retirees and as our population ages, the incidence of hoarding will likely go up over the next time period. And you also have to imagine that that age-related mental health situation also affects people with dementia. And I will say that when I started out as a property manager, like, we really didn't see any cases of dementia in the units that I manage, but that has increasingly become an issue as there are more and more old people living on their own. And it's actually estimated that in Canada, the statistics of dementia, like, dementia rates are set to double every 5 years now, looking into the future as our population ages and as lifespans get longer. So we also need to be aware as landlords that, having tenants who are slowly slipping into a kind of a demented state of mind, like, that's going to be something that we're going to be facing on a more regular basis as time goes on. Now, the other thing that I found really statistically interesting with this is that mental health spending in Canada and Quebec is really low. And so Canada allocates around 6.3% of total health spending to mental health. Now, this is fairly typical of some of the OECD countries, but if you compare us to places like France, which spends 15% of its health budget on mental health, Germany, which spends 11%, and the UK and Sweden, who spend 9% of their health budget on mental health, you will see that we're really not in a great position in Canada and Quebec as far as our mental health spending. And now the other thing to keep in mind, which affects this, which also kind of like blew my mind when I put my head into it, is that the budgets have not kept up with inflation. And a few weeks ago on the show, I was joking about $10 butter, right? Like, we can all remember at the beginning of COVID when like a pound of butter cost like $4, $5. And now when you go to the store, you have to be careful that you're not spending $9 or $10 on butter, never mind a pound of beef, right? So when you see what that inflation has done to our buying power, imagine that if government budgets have stayed the same over time, the buying power of those government budgets and also the tax base, because like ultimately, anecdotally that your salary has not kept up with inflation. But what do you think has happened to government tax revenues if what they're taxing is your salary? Like, their tax revenues have not kept up with inflation. And then, let's say whatever amount of money the Canadian and Quebec governments are spending on mental health, if that has just, tracked like upwards mildly, even, 5-6% over the past 5 years, we know what's happened to our buying power. And so even though the budgets might, slowly be going up, they are not being adjusted for inflation. And so it means that the resources to deal with mental health and all of health budgets, health spending in general, are just more and more stretched because the overall percentage that we spend is low, but then also the buying power of the amount of money that's allocated to dealing with that stuff is just being eroded by inflation the same way as your buying power is being eroded. And then, some of the other things, and like, I've had this feeling, like, sometimes, we have feelings and then you tune into the statistics and you're like, yeah, that's kind of like why I have this opinion. And then the other thing that's been going up is the cannabis-induced psychosis. And, I've had this feeling that since, weed was legalized, there definitely anecdotally seem to be more of my tenants, more young men who are spending a lot of time smoking weed. But a study in Ontario documented that post-legalization, so 2018 to 2023, cannabis-induced psychosis ER visits were up 39%. And it turns out that 44% of cannabis psychosis patients are later diagnosed with some sort of schizophrenia or schizophrenia spectrum disorder. And, when we mentioned earlier that it's young women who are disproportionately affected by social anxiety, well, cannabis-induced psychosis disproportionately affects youth and young men, with 16 to 25s being most affected. And so now, what you will have seen from some of these statistics is that, the mental health issues that we're suffering as a society are going up at the same time as our budgets are making it that there's less and less resources available to help people who have mental issues. I can share with you just one story at this point of, a tenant who was I believe, suffering from schizophrenia in one of the buildings that I managed. And so her, the way that this manifested itself was when her toilet broke down, she didn't call us. She actually started doing her business in shopping bags, which she then tied off and left in the bathroom. And at the same time, hoarding and kind of like leaving garbage lying around her unit. And so we actually got called in there for something that had nothing to do. It was like just a random building inspection. And then we observed that, you know, her toilet wasn't functioning and she was basically storing feces in bags in the unit and a whole bunch of other sanitary issues. And so then, you know, I tried to bring this before the tenancy board and that really had no effect whatsoever. And then, as what often happens, then the tenant missed a few rent payments. And then after there had been cockroaches brought into the building, fruit fly infestations, you know, we ended up getting an eviction notice because the woman had not paid her rent. And then the, you know, cherry on top of this story is that when she moved out, because the roaches were like had infested her unit in such an intense way, she then believed that there were bugs living in the wall. So she took a hammer to the bathroom stall, the shower stall, smashed the tile that was behind the, you know, shower fixtures and stuff like that. And then obviously continued to shower and, you know, clean herself in that area. And so all the water went into the wall. And then at the same time, because I guess she thought that the bugs were in the kitchen, she also ripped up the kitchen counter and the kitchen backsplash. And it looked, when we recovered the unit, like she had taken a sledgehammer to, you know, those parts of the unit. So, you know, this is kind of a story of something that can happen when people slip into a mental health crisis and there's really no sort of support that's offered. And, you know, one of the things I like to say is that if there was a crisis line, like if there was someone that I could call when I noticed that one of my tenants is suffering from a mental health crisis or something is going on, believe me, I would call that hotline to have them taken care of. And that honestly, like a lot of these people who are suffering from these issues, like they're not really capable of living independently in a communal setting where their behavior then affects the other residents. Because, you know, in this particular case, there was a destruction of property. So then, you know, once that tenant was evicted for rent non-payment, well, then we ended up having to redo the bathroom, redo the whole unit because she had basically trashed it. And then not to mention the fact that the whole building, so it was an apex, the whole building then got permanently infested with cockroaches, because what happens is that once the roaches get into the walls, they're able to like travel into the other units. And so like that building has been basically like infested by roaches, and all the other neighbors now have to live with that because there's one person who is mentally unwell who really wasn't kind of qualified to be looking after herself and looking after an apartment in a responsible way. And so, you know, just to share a last statistic about this, 30% of Canadians now live in single person households. And if you think about, you know, putting the mental health statistics together with that 30% of people living alone rate, well, what happens when some of those people who are suffering from mental issues, who are kind of borderline, when they tip over and like fall into crisis? Well, if they're living alone and they have disaffiliated from their family, they do not have other social networks around them, and the government does not have, we as a society do not put at their disposal like a means to support them, well, what's going to happen is that they're going to start having behaviors that are so antisocial and that just make it impossible for them to continue living independently. And then we have the experience of seeing a lot of unhoused people who have mental issues, you know, who are walking the city streets. So, you know, that's kind of how this ends up happening. And I'll tell you another story actually of something that happened recently, which was we had one tenant who was also kind of like borderline schizophrenic. And what she ended up doing was, you know, she had a sort of a psychotic break and trashed her own unit. So ripped out one of her windows, broke it, smashed it in the driveway, threw it down. And then she went to try to do the same thing and break an entering into her neighbor's unit. So at 4 a.m, I'm getting a call from like the panicked young woman who lives opposite her that her neighbor is now trying to smash in her window with an object and is then trying to bang down her door, you know, at 4 a.m. So, you know, at that point, obviously, like I told the woman that she needed to call the police because the property manager is not able to really do anything about this. But you know, the issue then becomes that us as the landlords, the property managers, the investors, because our society really doesn't have resources out there, and because those social networks don't exist in the way that they did, us as the landlords, we end up then having to confront some of those issues and really, you know, police them when the only tool that we have at our disposal is eviction. And, you know, the other thing what I will say, you know, in this environment in Quebec where we deal with the rental board, with the TAL, is that it's virtually impossible to have someone evicted for mental health related issues, even when these nuisance events come up. And I will tell you that every single mental health related eviction that I've carried out, it always happened because the tenant at some point stopped paying their rent. And so, you know, this is actually one of the other things that goes along with mental health issues, whether it's depression or, you know, psychosis, schizophrenia, dementia, is that as people kind of lose their independence and go into crisis, one of the things that ends up happening is they stop paying rent. And then you as the landlord, the position that you're put in, or the question that you have to ask yourself is, you can, like, you know, continue to allow them to live there rent free or to work with them on payment issues. But in that case, you're going to continue housing someone who's basically destroying your property and is completely disruptive to the other neighboring tenants. And, you know, it's going to generate phone calls for you, or else what's going to happen is the phenomenon where the good tenants who don't want to deal with those kind of issues and they're like, they're place of living will end up leaving. And so then you will basically have the value of your asset, or you know, the quality of life in your asset deteriorate because there's someone living there who suffers from untreated mental health issues, and they're just not able to live in a way that's collaborative you know, supportive of having good neighborly relations. And so, you know, in putting what I've told you into the context, the bigger context of this episode, and of, you know, me trying to help you as an investor, as a landlord, make sound decisions around some of these issues, is the first thing is just to help you understand that you are not alone, and that it's a statistical reality that as our government budgets, our health budgets that are allocated for mental health spending, are eroded and not upped to keep up with demand. And then also, if you, you know, own enough doors, it's to understand that some of these issues will happen. And we haven't really talked about addictions and substance abuse today, but, you know, also during COVID, I did not research those statistics today. Perhaps that will be another topic for another episode, but that, you know, I have watched a lot of my tenants slip into various kinds of addiction problems, and that, you know, opening the door to that means that us as landlords, we end up confronting some of those situations, and then being really the backstop of having to use the only tool at our disposal, which is eviction, basically for rent non-payment. And so, you know, what can you do as a landlord when you face some of these issues? Well, the first one is to just understand the way in which the TAL, you know, deals with these kind of like nuisance issues, right? Like, so for the TAL, these things of, you know, even the person, you know, who is defecating in bags, or the one who tried to break in entering into her neighbor's unit. Like, I tried to bring cases before the rental board for that, but the wait times are extremely long, and it's almost impossible to have an eviction granted for something like that. The only real way that you have to take back control of your building and police some of these kind of issues is when the inevitable rent non-payment comes, is to treat it as a non-payment file. You know, obviously you can do the process of documentation, but I will tell you, you know, another story. I've got another mentally ill tenant who I believe is more in the hoarding category. And so she hoards birds. So she has a unit that has 200 birds in it. And, you know, I was willing to turn the blind eye to this until she started feeding the squirrels and until mice installed themselves in the building. And I started having all of the other tenants in the building complaining about mice and squirrels. And then when I tried to initiate, you know, an extermination process, well, like, the woman wouldn't allow me to go into her unit because she didn't want to see me to see all the birds. And then obviously, like, when you're feeding 200 birds, that's a lot of bird food, and it's really impossible to keep your building running properly when that's there. And so We are now, you know, 5 months into that. The city inspector has come multiple times. We have an audience before the rental board in about a month. And, you know, I'm really not convinced that there's any meaningful sort of reckoning that's going to be coming either to, you know, stop the woman from having all of those birds. In fact, what ended up happening from calling the city inspector is that they basically, you know, sent her a social worker who then got her a lawyer. And so like now my lawyer is going to be talking to her lawyer at the rental board to do something about the 200 birds and the mouse problem to try to like recover some of the money that I had to spend and the effort that was made around trying to, you know, police that. But what I don't want you to do is to walk away from this episode and think that, you know, somebody manifesting mental health issues, it's going to be very easy to get a handle on that with the tool that is the rental board. Like that's really kind of not going to happen. And so, you know, you could try to build relationships with local support groups, but like I have not had the best track record with this because very often they will go and, you know, come to be sort of on the side of the tenants, and then you're going to end up having more legal headaches and, you know, more difficulty in kind of dealing with that. So, you know, the way that I have approached the issue is to more think about, you know, prioritizing protecting the other tenants and then also being mindful of the fact that if there's material damage being done to my investments, well, then I'm going to use the non-payment route because inevitably what happens as, you know, people who have mental health issues fall into crisis is that at some point they fall behind on their rent. And then can you really be expected to continue lodging them for free while they're creating neighborhood problems and destroying property, right? So unfortunately, I don't have a very upbeat end to an upbeat sort of tie-up for this episode, other than to say I think it's really, you know, constructive to see on the horizon to realize that like we are basically heading into a storm with this. Us as a society, we're heading into a storm with it, but that part of where the rubber meets the road on this, and I'm sure if you have friends who are police officers, that they will share similar stories with you in terms of the amount of calls that they have to go out on that are related to mental health, while us as investors and landlords confronting some of those places where the rubber meets the road and people who are in crisis and really shouldn't be living unaccompanied are then, you know, creating issues in the units that we own and manage. And that ultimately, like we end up with the ones being responsible for ensuring that the other residents are not disturbed by this on a regular basis. So, real estate fan, you know, I don't have a very cheerful ending to this episode for you other than perhaps to understand that you are not alone and that there's some really crazy, wild stories like this that are out there circulating. And, you know, also to not believe the hype of the fact that, you know, the homelessness issue is really all about rising rents and affordability. My approach to that would be to say that after managing over 1,000 tenants in my career, I have never once seen an eviction of someone who is either not suffering from mental health issues or addiction, and that really ends up into kind of a one-way street with eviction at the end of it when that issue gets severe enough, and that, you know, to feel guilty or to think that it's a question of rising rents that are creating, are the causal link that means that we're having homelessness crises in our cities. Like, I just don't think that that's a very good interpretation when there's this other slow moving car crash of mental health, lack of resources. And then the fact that because so many people live alone, 30% of Canadians live alone now, there's really no support network for a lot of those people that would help them mitigate some of the problems that they face when things kind of go downhill. So, real estate fan, I want to leave this episode on a note of action taking. So other than telling you, we will be willing to commiserate with you, to share stories, to you know, go a bit deeper on some of these tips at the next Equity Builders Club networking event on September 16th. Please come and join me there. I would love to hang out with you. I could tell you some even better stories when we're there. And of course, if you liked this episode, if you found it interesting, that it moved the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with a friend. You could also leave us a 5-star review, leave us comments. That helps the show perform better. And there is, of course, the other solution of just grabbing your friend's phone, your husband's phone, your wife's phone, and signing them up for the show. That also helps our downloads and helps more people find us. Until next week, real estate fan, good luck. And we'll tune in again in a week for the next episode of the Real Escape Investing Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.